To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
We are officially live again. We have the whole crew here today. Our deep sea navigator, Justin.
Howdy.
Yeah, howdy. We still have not fully identified. We could just be making all of this up. Could be lying to you guys. I'm sorry. The Viking's back.
I am. Halsa.
Yes, yes. We have other guests. We have Money Penny. That's right. She's here with us. She's going to keep us honest, do our research, provide us with cool gear. All these things.
Keep us in check.
Yes, fully in check. And we have a couple. Our local body scan expert, Michael, and his woman, Christina. They're here with us tonight.
Oh.
So, Michael has provided us previously with some mead, and we still are planning to enjoy that. But again, I have such a stock of alcohol lined up, guys. And
are we going to do the mead for Halloween?
I think the mead's happening at Halloween. It seems appropriate. Seems right. Right. Everyone agree with that?
So yeah, sounds good.
We can make that official. All right. So, anyway, everyone, we're here today. I have a kind of a basic alcohol, but it's a cool one. It's a Jim Beam Devil's Cut.
Ooh.
Now this borders on a flavored whiskey to me because of the way they make this. Jim Beam, obviously, one of the biggest distilleries in Kentucky. It's one of the biggest selling whiskeys in the world. According to them, they have the most...
absolute beautiful facility. If you ever get down there and you're going to do like a bourbon tour,
right,
you can go to the ones downtown Louisville. They're amazing. They're nice. It's a lot of information. Jim Beam's facility, it's in the Claremont, Kentucky, just south.
Yeah.
Beautiful rolling hills, beautiful green hills. Right now, with all the foliage turning,
yeah,
perfect time to go and visit there. Yeah.
So this Devil's Cut, what this is, it's a 90 proof gin. Yeah, I think your normal gin's 80. But there's a thing that when they make bourbon, they call it the angel share, and that's when you put 20 gallons in a barrel or whatever it is, you'll get 19 out. The evaporative part, they call it the angel share. Jim Beam came up with a clever marketing scheme to pull the remainder out of the casks and make a concentrate out of it, put it in this bourbon, which actually gives it more of the aging process and all artificially, and they call that the Devil's Cut. Clever, clever.
Yeah.
Yes, this is a decent, again, I've had this before, but I cannot remember when. So it will be kind of a surprise, everyone.
Cool little anecdotal aside, Devil's Cut Jim Beam is what accompanied me on my bear hunt to Virginia last year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Kept me company in my hotel room.
Yeah. It's good company.
So what you're saying is you and this guy named Jim spent the weekend together
all alone in the mountains.
the devil held the camera.
I'll pass that around. This smells fantastic. It really is. I know they've monkeyed with it, but I just don't know if I consider it a flavored whiskey or not. Again,
it's flavored with whiskey though.
Again,
so I mean,
flavored whiskeys. Yeah, it's whiskey flavored with
whiskey.
Other concentrated whiskey. Yeah.
Well, that's what a blended whiskey is. A blended whiskey is whiskey, mixed with other whiskeys, and that's why if you want to go with a single barrel or small batch, it's pure.
Yeah.
One barrel, but this stuff has got to be mixed, like five or six barrels they put together.
Something. Yeah. Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, cheers around the table. Let's take it around that way. Awesome.
Oh, that's nice.
All right, so I told you guys I would do this before.
Mm-hmm. That's not bad at all.
It's actually lovely. It's very, very mellow. I'm surprised by that. It's got a lot of flavor.
Got a lot of sweetness.
Yes.
Yeah.
This might just
very
be a really
oaky,
good bottle.
Which, makes sense.
Yeah.
But
right, it hits up here instead of back here as much.
Wonderful.
It's like we're sommeliers.
Right.
Need a cigar.
Everybody pinkies
up. I do drink a shocking amount of bourbon, so.
So I told everyone I would do this a couple episodes ago. I'm going to go ahead and get it out of the way. I have my four bourbons that I consider your reference grade. Like, if you want to go and buy some bourbons, and you don't want to spend a lot of money, but you want to experience bourbon, I think these round out everything you should be looking for. Number one is probably the most expensive of them, and that's Maker's Mark. Maker's Mark is distinct because, again, it has no rye in the mix. They use a red winter wheat instead of rye. So it's very different. It's distinct. It's really smooth. It's nice. It's not really overly body. There's not a lot of flavor to it.
Again, it's a sweet bourbon.
It's a sweet bourbon. It's reference grade bourbon to everyone else. Now, it is fourth on my list. So The most expensive is probably the last one I would recommend.
Yeah.
The second one in line to that is Buffalo Trace.
Now, oh,
if
amazing.
You, if you find good this, stuff, yeah. The secret's out. People know that Buffalo Trace punches well above its weight. It carries that distillery's namesake.
Yeah.
It's got a honey and vanilla finish like no other bourbon I've tried. It does not make sense that it sells for what it does, and I'm kind of worried one day that'll just be a $50 bottle of bourbon.
Yeah.
And now that it's getting more popular.
Yeah, really.
Isn't it one of them that was around before America was founded?
Yes, and it is one of the ones that operated through Prohibition. The same way they did.
They've had a lot of time to perfect it.
Yeah.
They have absolutely had. They make the best bourbons.
Yeah.
I believe that if I had to say, unless some sleeper company comes up from behind and takes them down.
It's won so many awards. I mean, I've been in many, living in Louisville for a decade, I was in many blind taste tests, and it won tons of times.
Yes. Is it one of them that's employee owned?
I don't know. That'd be worth looking into.
It seemed like I might have read Cesarat that somewhere.
Company,
but
I think owns it all.
Yeah.
Okay, I could be mistaken on that.
So, number two is Moneypenny's personal favorite, and it's a new addition. It's Elijah Craig.
Hmm.
I was floored by how good Elijah Craig was. I would have almost said that they had done some additions to it. It is so woodsy. We could have got the best bottle ever, I would say that. But I had two more of them.
Yeah.
And I've had some with Moneypenny here, and they were all fantastic. So it's in there now, and it's right at the top. Now, number one, this is still to me the king. I'm sure I've said it on here before. It's Jack Daniel's. Tennessee whiskey.
All right, no.
Tennessee whiskey. That's
no.
What
I don't see how you
no. I don't like Jack Daniels at all.
They're different.
Like I feel like they're all
completely different classes here.
They're Jack Daniels.
I cannot agree with you.
If you want to take a universal bodied whiskey, it just has a different profile. It is so sweet for what it is.
So harsh.
Now this is the thing. If you want to make sure you experience Jack Daniels properly, go ahead and get the Gentleman Jack.
Yeah.
That's a controlled process. Because I've had bottles of Jack Daniels that were probably the best bourbon I've ever had. It is a Tennessee whiskey. Again, it's sweeter. It's got a Lincoln process done to it. But I've had ones, too, that were sharp like a bottle of cheese.
See, I'm personally offended by this, and I'm going to tell you why. All right? I have had two, maybe three, of the worst drinking experiences of my life.
Right.
Worse. I'm talking about, if you were to talk all the drinking experiences of my life and put them in a list, the very top, the three worst are all three involving Jack Daniels.
Oh, God. So it's personally.
That's why I can't. I will never. If you put a bottle of Jack Daniels in front of me and a bottle of horse urine in front of me, I am seriously going to look at that horse urine and think about it.
Yeah.
I might not drink it. I might end up drinking the Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, most people be like, oh, it's a no-brainer. It's not that no-brainer.
It makes
sense. It's like, I don't know if I want to.
I would,
you might drink the Jack and then end up drinking the horse urine.
Yeah.
There's two I think I would add to your list.
I have honorable mentions. I wasn't going to bring them up. Go ahead. Throw these in here. Let's hear.
Angel's Envy. I think
Angel's Envy is a decent one. I drank a lot of that at the concert.
It is a very, very good bourbon. And I really like the Dickel.
George Dickel is a better version of Jack Daniels. Yeah. It is a little more consistent across the board.
That's, and it has a, you can taste the consistency.
Yes.
Where it has a more uniform flavor.
A George Dickel would also be almost interchangeable with Jack. Jack's just so universally known.
Yeah.
I want it to come off as this is a bourbon everyone has access to.
Yeah.
Well, have you heard the story about how Jack Daniels died? I've had such bad experience with Jack Daniels that when I heard how Jack Daniels died, I was happy. Now, obviously, this man died 100-something plus years ago. He had a safe in his office.
Uh-huh.
And they still have this today. It's down there at the distillery that you can go and look at it. He had a safe in his office, and he forgot the combination.
Yeah.
And he got really pissed, and he kicked it.
Yeah.
But when he kicked it, he broke his toe.
Yeah.
And, of course, being who he was, because I heard, if you hear stories, he's a very stubborn man. He was like, I'm fine. Yeah. By the time he finally went to get it checked out, it was gangrenous.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, so they took his leg. Well, that wasn't enough, and he died. So his own, I wouldn't say stupidity, but his own stubbornness killed him.
Yeah.
And after everything that's happened with Jack Daniels in my life.
He was a pretty notorious hothead.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm okay with this.
He was as abrasive as his whiskey.
One of the things I love about Elijah Craig is the history of why that is called Elijah Craig.
Yeah, the preacher.
And, like, going to Heaven Hill and like seeing all of the brands that they have, and yet they still have one just devoted to this man who was like, honestly, it sounds like he was kind of just low key awesome.
Yeah.
Like just a preacher who liked to drink.
Yeah.
Sounds like my whole step family is Catholic, so this concept is very familiar to me.
Right, right.
I would also add larceny to that.
It's okay.
I liked it. It's one of them that it's consistent. Mm-hmm. It's really consistent. I've tried a lot of them, like Maker's Mark and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I can get one bottle of Maker's Mark and it's just smooth and awesome. And then the next one, I might as well use it to clean my paintbrushes.
Right. I still feel like that might have happened with this Ezra Brooks. That was rough.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was one of the ones that really got me. Like,
might need to blend it with something else to make it drinkable.
Nah, it's what it seems like. Yeah. It's sharp. It tastes like rubbing alcohol with a little wood.
Woodsy rubbing alcohol.
Somebody stuck some tongue depressors in some turpentine.
The main honorable mention
once
I
they're
have,
dissolved.
Those are the ones you look up the like old-timey cocktail recipes for.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was at a bar the other day, and the bartender made me this cocktail that he wouldn't tell me the name of at first with scotch, and I hate scotch.
Yeah.
It's not my thing.
Not at all. No.
Like, bourbon, I feel like if you really like bourbon, you probably don't really like scotch, even if you'll drink it.
Yeah.
It's usually an either-or.
And like it just tasted amazing. It tasted like what I wish scotch could maybe taste like. But yeah,
he probably tricked you and just made it with Jack Daniels.
I don't
charge for the scotch.
I don't like to drink anything I can taste the bog in. Like, and that's a selling point. Like, oh, you can really taste the bog in this one.
old tar.
You can taste the bog corpses.
Bog corpses are a thing.
This has got some McCormick in it.
It's made with real McCormick, so you know it's good.
Before we get on to our main topic, guys, I'm going to throw in my honorable mention that I do want to throw in because of what we're drinking is a Jim Beam Black. It runs the same price as your Jack Daniels. It is kind of Jim Beam's Gentleman Jack.
Yeah. It is far superior to Jack Daniels.
It is far superior. It has a different taste. I almost think I would say it's a different recipe, but I don't think it is. I think they just age it longer, and that's all the difference.
And used premium barrels.
Yeah,
that's part of it too.
Yeah, as opposed to just your warehouse storage.
So everyone tonight, we had everybody gather together, and we talked about our topics, but we got everybody together at once because we wanted to talk about military veterans. And just veterans throughout history or people we personally know that we respect. I think this is a good topic because when we started it out, we met with my dad.
Yeah.
My dad was drafted in Vietnam. He went over in 69, I believe. He served that. I think he served 16 months, I think was what it was, because if you served the extra months, they would let you out of your draft and you could go home.
Yeah.
So he was first Cav. His brother actually joked with him before he left and said, "You'll be all right, Rick, as long as you don't get put in first cab." And they didn't know. My dad had multiple brothers, so they didn't know which one was going to get sent. He was the one. It's fascinating to hear him talk about the draft, too. You got a lottery number, and then they would call you in, and you would have to do all these tests. And he tried as hard as he could to fail these tests, knowing that if he couldn't hear, he had some kind of disability, that they wouldn't be able to take him, and they figured it out. He ended up.
He wasn't the first one.
No. It's not the first time they've been through that pony show.
He actually was pretty sure he got it on the hearing test. He failed it enough that they were like, "Oh, this guy's got problems." But he was telling his brother what he did, and someone told him. He thinks that's what did it. But anyway, it made him who he is today.
Loose lips, sink ships.
I'm absolutely going to try. I have tried twice now, unsuccessfully, to get him to tell me the whole hilarious story of his actual military career and going to Vietnam, dealing with all that he did.
I can tell you exactly why he's a little hesitant about that. Being a veteran myself, and I was in Iraq in 2004, 2005, we're hesitant to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hesitant to talk about it around certain people. I'm a very open person. I will tell you anything, but there's stuff that y'all aren't going to understand unless you served.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, if you, the Brotherhood of Combat is a real thing. I could tell you guys stories that you guys would just sit there and be like, I'm going to back away slowly from this person because he's a little on the crazy side. But I tell that same story to a veteran, and him and I are both looking at each other because he understands it. I understand him. And that's probably one of the reasons he's a little hesitant about it.
Yeah.
Now, you take your dad to a VFW post, sit him down with a bunch of us old, you know, and he will just diarrhea of the mouth, and you'll just be sitting there going,
yeah,
I've never seen this before, because he's in the company of, like, people
yeah.
who aren't going to, because we all feel like we're going to get judged, not because of, it's just because we see things in a different way. It's like our dark sense of humor.
Yeah.
I have a dark Vanta black, you know, that color that everybody's talking about? Yeah, my sense of humor is about there.
So several of my friends have heard his stories. He has the benefit of being his age, where he has virtually no shame at this point, so yeah. that helps.
Yeah.
So it's just getting him familiar with, you know, being on a on the internet. He's still a little paranoid about that, you know. He's internet savvy. We actually started out on eBay when you had HTML in all
the
items.
I remember on the TV. You had this little, like,
web TV. Yeah,
it was keyboard on the TV the
yeah,
whole time.
That did happen. I've written more HTML code, probably miles of it. Very random facts, guys. So, I don't know, but who would like to go next? Who has one? Who has a good one?
Well, I have a list of various people from my personal history and other ones that I've kind of researched. I also, in my family has this farm, and it's called the Clark Farm, because my grandmother's maiden name was Clark.
Right.
And if you're from southern Indiana or from Louisville, you know the name Clark. You have George Rogers Clark, and you have William Clark of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. And people don't realize that they're brothers. Well, they have another brother, and he was the oldest of the group, and his name was Jonathan Clark, General Jonathan Clark, and that is my direct eighth great-grandfather.
Interesting.
And cool. I always talk, when I tell people this story, I always say, my family took sibling rivalry to, like, a whole new level. Jonathan Clark, he fought at the Battle of Monmouth. He fought with Washington. He fought the British during the whole war. Really great person. He rose up through the ranks by his own valor.
Uh-huh.
And then his little brother, George, was like, you know what? I'm going to go west to the frontier. And he founded Louisville in Scout Island in Clarksville. And then the youngest of the brother was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go west and explore the entire country.
Actually go west.
Yes.
So, just go slightly south by the Ohio.
My family just takes sibling rivalry to, like, a whole new level. And that's my direct... Oh, yeah. We still do to a point, but that's my direct story, and it's... always one I love to tell people.
That's
yeah.
cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's why Clarksville. Clarksville's named after him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he founded Scout Island, and Scout Island was a fort that was in the middle of the Ohio River, and it no longer exists. It kind of, if you're standing in front of Louisville and you're looking out into the Ohio River, that big wide expanse, in the middle was an island.
Right.
And they built a fort on it, and that was what caused the cities to sprout up on either side, and now it's all washed away and it's gone.
Yeah.
But that's how... that's how my family came to this area, and still here to this day.
That's amazing.
We're like cockroaches. You can't get rid of us.
Well, that is, my dad's from New Albany. That's where he comes from. So he still lives down there currently. Mm-hmm. And he has repeatedly told me stories when he was younger about swimming across the Ohio. Right there under the bridge. He said you had to watch out. You could get hit by a barge.
Oh, wow.
And one time swimming across, he and a friend of his got swarmed by bees.
Oh, Lord.
And he had to drag his friend across to get him the rest of the way.
Wow. That is not a... that's yeah. what?
Swarmed by bees while swimming the Ohio?
Yes, while swimming the Ohio.
What did he do to piss off those bees?
If I had to guess.
Or yellow jackets, yeah. Something that, yeah.
Something that was moving and maybe already angry. So,
yeah.
Because I can't imagine why bees, unless they were looking for a spot to land.
The only thing I can think of is if they were in a tree that got washed out,
yeah.
and he happened to swim next to that tree, and they're swarmed angry anyway.
Next to one of the pylons, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, because they get washed out all the time, and the whole tree will wash down because they'll wash off of it. And yeah, I mean, there's several different species of bee that put their nests in inside of trees, honeybees being one of them, but honeybees aren't very aggressive.
They're not aggressive, they can land on you. I think the kid, the other, his friend did get stung. I'll get some more on that, but I've heard this story for a long time.
Huh, that's cool.
He did this pretty routinely, though, and that is a long
That is
stretch.
A way to go. I grew up on that river.
With a current.
I had houseboats and sailboats. I've been all up and down that river.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'd probably do it way upriver, but I've heard so many stories of bad things happening closer you get to the city.
Yeah.
That terrifies me.
Yeah. Well, he also said even back then you couldn't eat fish out of that river.
Yeah.
Because they just tasted it off.
Yeah, those bans started in the 40s and early 50s because the pollution.
Yeah, and it's still there.
Well, it was worse then because we didn't really understand how our pollution affected
everything.
Our waterways and stuff like that. So we were using like arsenic acid to like pull minerals out of the dirt and the rocks, and which we still do.
Yeah,
like there was a mine that they had proposed in Alaska here recently, and it finally just got kind of the final nail in its coffin. The Gemstone Mine, I think it was called. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like in an earthquake zone, very, very seismically active, with a bunch of natural water in the area, and the deposits that were there, they were having to pull out. Like it wasn't like what you see on TV where they're going in with a pickaxe and, oh, here comes a quarter pound nugget in my hand.
Yeah.
No,
the seven dwarves. But
most of the gold and stuff that they're pulling out is just like minute bits that's inside the ground, and they have to use arsenic acid to pull it out.
Yeah.
And the company that was proposing doing it was like, Well, we'll make sure that we take precautions to make sure it stays safe.
This
like,
time.
Yeah, sure. In Alaska, in an extremely highly seismically active zone that would leach its water, if ever broken, into massive amounts of the other waterways that are going every direction. You're just going to pump arsenic acid into that and just be completely safe.
Yeah,
it's not how it's going to work.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's good.
You bought all the local houses.
It's just Indian reservation land. Who cares?
That is common. We actually have a lot of nuclear waste in an Indian reservation in a mountain.
I actually had an uncle that directly after Vietnam, he had done some dive training in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So he got a job as the best paying job available to him. Was helping doing repairs to the pylons of the Ohio River, the Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they pulled more than one 7 foot plus long gar out of the Ohio.
Yeah,
he said you would be like 30 feet deep working, doing underwater welding and stuff. And all of a sudden, all the light around you just blacks out and you can feel something moving above you and you have no idea if that's a oarfish or that's a 7 foot gar.
Yeah. It's gotta be an alligator gar to be that
alligator
long.
Gars are monsters.
Yeah, they're huge.
They're still here.
They're bad in like the Ohio River and the salt
further
river.
South.
He's the only person I know that's actually had a lamprey attached.
Kids have actually caught.
I don't know of any documented cases where one has been a human, though. They're not very aggressive towards.
No. Watching barracuda when we went deep sea fishing was shocking to me because they're the same build.
Yeah.
They look similar, but they are savage. The difference
though between personality of a freshwater fish and a saltwater fish is like a different world.
Yeah.
And they conserve their energy, the gar do. They just kind of float around.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just
like me.
That's you don't mess with them.
Well,
that
and
same uncle
I
actually
think you'd have
had
to physically grab one, and even then, I don't think they'd do much.
Like what we usually do when we catch them, and we're catching like 2-3 foot ones, you know, short ones,
standard size.
You talking needle nose?
You either needle nose it and pop it out, or if they've swallowed it, you just cut the line and
Well, no needle nose gar, but I mean that's what we have around here primarily in the smaller streams. They thought the spotted gar went extinct. They finally found some, or at least extinct in this area. They finally found some again recently.
That's awesome.
So I have another famous veteran from the Revolutionary War.
Have at it. That's what we're supposed to be talking about.
This is how we operate, folks. Sorry.
We go on these tangents, and then we're just like, hey, let's come back.
The whiskey is sinking in.
Yes, to be fair, you gave us bourbon first.
So I have, whenever anybody asks me to talk about like the Revolutionary War, which is my absolute favorite era of history to talk about, I always tell them the story about John Paul Jones. And now John Paul Jones, there's a ship named after him in the United States Navy. He is considered one of the founding fathers of the United States Navy. And a lot of people don't know what he did. I mean, he was a privateer beforehand. He was a member of the British Navy, and then he became, you know, member of the United States Navy. He was tasked by George Washington to take Benjamin Franklin over to France to parley with the French, to get help from them. So he does this, and he drops off Benjamin Franklin, and he's sitting there, and he was thinking, I don't know what I'm supposed to do next. Nobody gave him any orders. Nobody told him what to do. So he's sitting there, and he's talking to his crew, and he's like, guys, England's, like, right there. Like, literally, right there. He goes, why don't we just go harass England for a few months? So, basically, the founder of the United States Navy became a pirate. He went up and down the coast. He was attacking any ship that had the British flag on it. He was harassing. He wouldn't, like, get into full-on battles like you'd see back with Trafalgar and Nelson.
He would attack what he could
beat. He would shoot at him and then leave.
Yeah.
Or he would, his favorite thing to do was he would find a fort or a fortification or a castle, and he would wait till nighttime, and he would sneak in and attack the place at night. And the big problem with that is you're not taking their cannons. Their cannons are still there.
Yeah.
And as soon as you leave, unless you kill everybody, I mean, we're not he wasn't Attila the Hun. He's not going to just kill everybody.
Right.
The problem is they now have cannons, and you're trying to leave. So his favorite thing to do was he would take a bag of nails and a hammer, and he would go to the, I'm blanking out on the word, the hole that you pour the powder down in the back of the cannon to fire from.
Yeah,
he would take nails, and he would jam them in there. Now, that's basically, your cannon's worthless.
It's inert now.
Yeah,
you can do one of two things. Either drill a new hole or try to drill that hole out.
Yeah.
And he did this for almost a year. He would just go up and down. And the British kept sending ships at him, and he was attacking their coast. People always think that the Revolutionary War was fought here in the colonies. But no, he took the war to them.
Yeah.
And it was a real demoralizing thing for the British. They were just like, wait a minute. The war was supposed to be happening on the other side of the Atlantic. Why are we getting attacked here?
Yeah.
And a Dutch hole?
Yeah, no. So sorry for the laughter.
Touch hole.
Yeah, that part of the cannon near the rear portion, also known as the breech of the cannon, is called officially the touch hole.
Okay. That's why touch hole is giggling.
Sorry, I had to be like 12 for a second.
It's what you're here for. Penis facts and touch holes.
There's another interesting fact about John Paul Jones. He also went on to be the keyboardist of Led Zeppelin.
Are we talking about another vampire?
Yes.
Tom Cruise, Keanu Reeves, and John Paul Jones. All a bunch of vampires.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So I have a list of veterans that I think is really cool. I was more interested in thinking of people that served around when my dad did, or even going back to World War II. I had a long conversation with my niece's boyfriend today. He's a big World War II buff. Grandpa was there, gave him all his memories and stuff and all the pictures. So we talked a lot about that and kind of put me in the mind of it. And I was just thinking, it's weird every now and then I'll think of someone and think, Didn't I see that they were in the military? And I almost got to thinking that a lot of people would get that listed about them and it wasn't true. But pulling up random celebrities and looking for their military service is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
So many celebrities, especially ones around the 50s to the 80s, had military service. Like, more than you would imagine. The first one that caught me and got me good was George Carlin.
Seven dirty things you can't say on television, George Carlin.
Mr. Anti-Establishment. Everybody is
celebrity. George Carlin.
George Carlin was in the military. Money Penny, if you would, please.
Absolutely.
So,
a radar technician.
There we
That's
go.
That's fun.
So, yes, George Carlin was a military serviceman. In the same vein as that, Morgan Freeman, who also became kind of anti-establishment. He was in the military. He had service.
I actually have a book recommendation. George Carlin wrote a lot about his military service in the books Napalm and Silly Buddy. It's a fantastic satirical book.
That's
my father loves that book.
It is brilliant. It
he
lambasts
will not talk about
all
Vietnam,
of society.
He loves the satire.
Yeah.
He loves,
brilliant.
Like, just...
He puts war in perspective in a way that...
Yeah.
Catch 22 did in that same vein, but with a lot more fuck use.
Yes! Yeah, a lot more profanity.
Articulated more to our level.
And my father, who is now Mormon, who I'm not sure I've ever heard him actually swear. He, like, apologetically shares this book with me. He's like, I can't talk to you about
this. I can't say this. This guy says it for me.
This is my magic underwear won't let me talk about it.
But the subject.
Sacred.
Yeah, sacred.
If ever I was going to cuss, it would be at this point in my life. Yeah. Not when I was breaking horses in West Texas growing up.
Lovely. So, Morgan Freeman, yeah, he was one. He was in the military. This one does not surprise me, Mr. Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
Air Force. He was an Air Force police officer, which is what I was.
There we go.
We were both Air Force.
And strangely, I've never seen you both in the same room.
Never.
Look, all I'm saying is I have to keep my feet on the ground. Or else, you know, it's harboring, you know, holding deadly weapons in the air.
Oh, yeah, that's a fact. You had to register them.
Brandishing, you know, a deadly weapon. No.
As soon as I step into a state, I have to call. Register. So, yeah, Chuck Norris was there. Clint Eastwood, obviously, I think a lot of people know Clint Eastwood served, but he actually was drafted. I mean, we were still drafting during the Korean War.
Yeah.
So that happened. It's funny, we drafted people into service before Vietnam, but Vietnam was such a quagmire.
It's funny, though, I think most people associate draft dodging with Vietnam. We actually had about twice as many draft dodgers during World War II.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was very common.
It was.
A large portion of the expats in Canada came from the late 1930s.
It's always going to be dodged. If you can get out of a situation that you're being absolutely forced into that is literally life or death, people are going to dodge that, especially in situations where the country is not backed. Going into World War II, we had about a 40% approval rating of us going into World War II.
Yeah.
Even to the point to where when we stormed Normandy Beach, there was really no statistical reason for us to do that. But the amount of lives we lost storming that beach, which we knew was a bad situation, we knew was never going to work very well, what that actually did for our country is, not saying our government's cruel bastards or anything, but what it did was sway the country to back the war.
It was a sacrifice.
It's ironic that you said something about that earlier, about the free thinkers and the anti-establishment. There is not a single military member that I know that served in the military that doesn't now dislike or distrust their government. Love their country.
Yeah.
Distrust or dislike their government.
I just read an interesting fact about the storming of Normandy. Hitler had ran out of methamphetamine and had been up previously for 5 days straight, and he was sleeping, so he didn't order the large 50-cal machine guns into place. Otherwise, it would have never worked. Like, we knew that that's where we were coming. We knew it was going to be a slaughter. But because he ran out of meth, literally...
Meth and syphilis.
Here we are, back to meth.
Well, and we knew that...
Oops.
Normandy was very scarcely manned.
Yeah.
It was never a point where it was a guard station on a sheer cliff. They did not expect people to really seriously try to take a sheer cliff on the point of a peninsula that you could easily go around. Like, I think there was only a couple hundred people manning the entire thing, and we sent thousands and thousands of people to take a pointless cliff watch, but just so we could sway the American people. Look how many lives we lost to those damn Germans. Yeah. And I'm not saying there wasn't a real good reason for us to fight the Germans, but our government has shown time and time again that they are not against sacrificing human lives, American lives, to get what they want done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's happened throughout our history.
Yeah. Throughout everybody's history, it's not Americans alone. Yeah. That's like I hear all the talk about, you know, the mean old Germans did all these human experimentations. We were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Germany, Germany was doing the same thing.
Are you telling me today that people in power will do evil things?
Right.
No.
Oh my God.
My heart. I don't know if I can stand this.
The head just exploded.
Yeah. Reality.
Yeah.
We are in a dumpster fire. Oh,
yeah.
Something about testing.
So this next one I have, this one's, I've reference checked this. Moneypenny's gonna have to, she's gonna have to go in on this one though. E. Arthur.
Oh yeah,
Susan B. Arthur,
the Golden Girl.
She was a Marine.
Yeah.
I know this one. I know about her.
Yeah,
everybody
lovely
says it. Oh,
she was
a
badass.
The Golden Girl. She was a Marine truck driver.
Yes, yeah.
She was a badass.
B. Yeah. Arthur.
It was like one of the only jobs that a lady could have in the Marine Corps at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And still, I mean, you're a Marine.
She
a
was
Marine
going to the front lines.
Yeah.
Bringing
yeah
needed
supplies. Yeah.
She was a badass. And she chose that job specifically because she wanted to serve her country.
Yeah.
I actually saw an interview, an old interview from the early 90s with her on YouTube one day.
Yeah.
She was all about it. She was like, I wanted to prove I could do what the boys could do.
Yeah.
And she did the damn thing.
Have you seen
thing
a picture of her from those days?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I went up on her.
Dude,
yeah,
during World War II, she was smoking.
Yeah.
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 I wasn't talking about during the 80s, so she was smoking, too.
Yeah. Let's do the cheers of two things. To B. Arthur at one, and to women in the military.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Times.
Like my very own mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have another book recommendation. The book.
What do we got?
Ladies, you'll probably want to look up this one. It's called Fight Like a Girl. It's about a woman who grew up, I can't think of her name. She grew up wanting to be a superhero, so she made herself a superhero.
Mm.
She had a black belt by the time she graduated high school. She joined the military. She had the fastest in-flight fuel up in a helicopter ever. I'm fairly certain her records still hold. She was master at hooking up with a fuel jet to fuel up in air.
That's not where we thought you were going.
You said hooking.
You
did
well.
She had a master's in hooking up.
Now that I'm, like,
she's an absolute badass.
Yeah.
Right. She could kick all of our asses.
There was a hard pause.
Yeah.
And we would really enjoy it too. We'd
yeah
be like,
yeah. And she's pretty attractive.
You know, I would contend that probably to this day, well, let's just say my parents, who are now divorced, met in the Marine Corps, and my father, after they were divorced, described my mother as a pit bull. Like, she was the public affairs officer at Paris Island,
oh,
which
Lord
is once,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She also outranked my father.
Lovely.
I'm getting on top.
Right?
Brings a whole new definition to climbing the,
like,
corporate ladder.
Growing up, I never questioned why they weren't married anymore. It was just kind of understood.
Yeah.
They're both great people.
She demoted him.
Right. Exactly. Oh, exactly. But then she married an army vet, and I was like, weird.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, army guys take orders.
No,
Air Force men take orders well, too, just so you know.
Just
how? That is good to know.
So
you're going to sit down right now.
In this game, one of the other servicemen that I did not expect at all was Mr. Hugh Hefner.
What?
Moneypenny, if you would.
Army.
Absolutely.
He was Army. I believe I remember that.
Anybody else have votes?
I thought he was Army.
I'm gonna guess.
I'm gonna guess
Navy.
I want to know
Navy
what
because
think
the
wanna,
seal.
Yeah.
And he always wears that Navy jacket.
He was Army.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, it was Army.
100%, sir.
All right. Yeah. Interesting. So, Army soldier in World War II. He is just as old as my brain was telling me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Hugh was in the military. You never hear that mentioned.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
So the last one. Yes, this is the one that got me good. Bob fucking Ross.
I've known about him for years. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I swear, his whole series of shows was like almost an art therapy project.
Yeah.
And like his affinity
He started painting because of PTSD.
Right.
He was Korean War, wasn't he?
He repeatedly mentioned his service during the show.
Now, Bob Ross,
his catalog, there are so many of these. I've watched hundreds of these with my grandparents. Yeah. I never heard him mention it.
Yeah.
So it kind of shocked me. I was like, Bob, the Afro calm dude.
Oh
right.
Yeah.
I have one more good one to add to your list. Mr. Rogers was a scout sniper.
is that fake?
No, okay. I've heard that for years.
Yeah, I've heard that go both ways.
I've heard it go that everybody says that Mr. Rogers was a scout sniper and that he wears sweaters and.
I'm sorry, guys.
What?
He never served in the military.
It's false.
I heard that for years.
I just Googled it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I thought that I heard that got disproved.
This is exactly why I have my doubts about Bob fucking Ross.
Bob Ross has mentioned it himself. Mr. Rogers, that was kind of an internet thing. It didn't come around until the internet kind of started to blow up.
Wasn't it something like he had tattoos on?
Yes. Yeah, he always wore those sweaters, and it was kind of... It started out as an internet joke that just kind of got out of hand for a minute.
Right.
Like, yo, he's this calm guy, but he used to snipe people at 1,000 yards, and he's got all these different kills, and he's covered in tattoos.
How it started was a screenwriter named Noah Harpster claimed on the internet that he'd gone swimming with Mr. Rogers and saw a sniper tattoo.
That's it. That's
when they went skinny dipping.
Oh my God, skinny!
I don't want to know where that tattoo was.
Whole new meaning to Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
He had never met Mr. Rogers.
So, did you know that there's a whole there are a host of urban legends surrounding Mr. Rogers, such that a very quick Google search will show you article after article debunking or confirming
I just looked through a list.
I wonder if it's just because he was just so part of the formation.
And he was so perfect. He had like, such a perfect persona.
He was wholesome. There has to be something wrong with him.
Yeah, there's got to be something.
I watched Mr. Rogers. I wasn't allowed to watch TV,
but I can
watch
Okay, guys, we have to look. Lamar Burton.
Oh my God.
Lamar Burton.
Yeah. Clearly, he was an astronaut. Oh, wait, hold on. I didn't use
it. Oh, well, are we guessing what he was first?
I don't know.
Anybody?
I'm going to say Navy.
I'm going to say National Guard.
I'm sorry. He was a military brat.
That's what it
was. Okay. Yeah.
He was in Starfleet.
I don't think Starfleet counts.
Space Force.
I got to back us up a little bit, too. One of the names on your list was Clint Eastwood.
Yes, sir.
And Clint Eastwood would brag about it and boast about it and play it up like this big-ass thing, like he was a military veteran. He was already in the edges of stardom at the time.
Right.
And when he got into the military, got drafted into the military, he ended up getting shunted to the side and being made a lifeguard at a fort.
It's where he got into his swing, yeah.
And he never actually saw any military service. It was a service. Don't get me wrong.
No combat.
It was a service. Yeah. He never saw overseas service. He was essentially put on an easy duty.
Like Elvis. Elvis was the same way. Elvis Presley. He put in supply or something.
Right. He wasn't trudging the jungles and fighting overseas. He was.
Like Ronald
Reagan. The kid boots got put on him, and he, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, great. He served his country. He did what.
Look, soldiers need to eat. They need boots. They need bullets.
They need to not drown in the neighborhood pool, apparently.
But it's like the line, I ain't no senator's son. And that's a true thing. I've actually, some of my friends that have went to the military and made their way up the ranks in various ways, they talked about those guys being given, professionally done rifles to qualify with.
Commissioned officers.
Uh-huh. It's like one of my favorite movies of all time is one of the most accurate military movies I've seen probably to date, and that's Platoon.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole thing, the main character of the story is a rich guy's son who volunteered for it because he didn't think it was right that all these poverty-stricken kids got drafted in and had to go die for the war. And the whole time in this movie, before he stuck out like a sore thumb when he got there to all these people that were the poor kids that did have to do it. They were the grunts. They were the people just dragging themselves by the bootlaces before they got there.
Yeah.
And so he stuck out like a sore thumb, and he was made fun of when he actually announced to him that I volunteered. He's like, "You volunteered for this shit, man? What the hell's wrong with you?
If
you could be home eating steak instead of slugging it out in the stu-" But
that brings me to another recommendation. Oliver Stone, who wrote and directed Platoon, he has a show on Netflix called Oliver Stone's America,
mm-hmm.
and it is absolutely fucking brilliant. Wonderful. He starts at the Vietnam War, and he was staunchly against the war, but he surrounded himself with veterans to write Platoon. Like, there's a reason why it's so realistic,
right.
Because he he supported the soldiers.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Not the war, right. And most of the soldiers supported the soldiers.
So
and not the
so
war.
So dark and accurate up to the point where, like, when the first person to die in the movie was some greenhorn, and when the firefight started, he stood up, and it was just, I mean, there was no sympathy for the kid that
died.
Wasn't
there also the one guy that was like 2 days away from getting out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was killed as well. It's like, that happened.
And they addressed fragging, which happened all the time.
The white phosphorus grenades they called Willie Pete, they did not shunt on what those things did at all. That one guy got one that stuck under his clothes and burnt into his back.
Yeah.
And his sergeant reached into his flesh and pulled it out and threw it to the ground. Because those white phosphorus grenades would burn through. If you dropped one on top of your head, it wouldn't stop burning until it fell out your sack.
I actually got to play with some thermite when I was over there. And thermite is the modern equivalent to white phosphorus. Yeah. We don't really use white phosphorus anymore.
No, it's too
old. We have thermite grenades now, and we don't use those in a offensive capacity.
Yeah.
All over Iraq and Afghanistan, various places, there are relics from hundreds of wars. And we found our anti-air guns everywhere.
Yeah.
Really? By this war, they were, you know, no good anymore. They were, you don't need them. So every time we found one, we would just take a thermite grenade and put it on top of the breech.
Yep.
We'd open the breech about an inch or two, put a thermite grenade right there, walk it away, and that would basically fuse it and make your cannon
plug
worthless.
The barrel, plug the breech.
So
that was a touch hole.
The white phosphorus.
Plug in that touch hole, everybody.
I'm going to put some thermite in your touch hole, pal.
weren't they actually put on the Geneva Convention? On the Geneva list?
The Willie Pete?
The white phosphorus grenades?
Well, you know, we don't really like the Geneva Convention because every time we come up with something that really works good for us.
I'm not saying we like it, but
everybody complains and says, we should ban that. The Germans during World War I, the slam fire, the 1817 shotgun.
Yeah.
Or 1897, whatever. I think it was 1897.
1897.
Yeah.
They're like, we should ban that. Why? Because it's effective?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need a Geneva Convention that.
Yeah. So this is a random fact about the military that's happening right now. They have adopted the SIG P320. Baffles me why that one won when it had drop fire issues right from the start.
Right.
Has no manual safety on the trigger. I could have predicted this was going to happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, SIG has fixed it. I do love the company SIG. They're a good company.
Yeah.
But that was crazy. The gun has a terrible bore axis. I'm nerd talking now, sorry.
Yeah.
And they have adopted a hollow point bullet to go in that, even though
that is specifically discussed
in multiple areas that it's considered an inhumane round.
Well,
what round is humane?
That's a good
point. I would rather you shoot me with a Full Metal Jacket 22.
Well, we spent a lot of time figuring out how to make bullets tumble and yaw and the twist rate that works for them and things like that. That happened to Vietnam. So we've tried to, like, play inside those rules. And finally, we were like, we're not fighting that much anymore. Let's just go ahead and do the stuff that works the best.
Yeah. Well, we've never really picked those contracts based on it being good.
Right.
I mean, look at them four versus the X-95. The dirt test, the X-95 blows it out of the fucking water. But them four's cheap.
Right. Or the Beretta. The whole story of why we carried the Beretta.
We wanted the air base.
We wanted to keep our bases that we had in Italy. And exactly. Beretta basically, sorry, the Italian government basically came to us and said, you're going to take this because it's an Italian company, and we're going to get some kickbacks from that. Or you're going to take all these bases out. And at the time, Aviano, which is one of the biggest bases we had, was one of our primary staging points is to attack the Soviet Union during the Cold War. So basically, we were strong-armed into that.
Yeah. And I think that's where most of those contracts come from. Backdoor deals.
Oh, everything governmental is all whose hands grease and whose.
Except money.
Yeah.
Well, I'm baffled how SIG got that contract, though, because they're actually fighting the government right now over a, they call it a muzzle brake, but it's the core of a monocore suppressor that they would sell you on a rifle, and then you would buy the sleeve and register that.
Yeah.
And they were trying to get to where you could form one of these things real quick. And I, like, again, guys, this is gun nerd talk, but so SIG was currently in a fight with the U.S. government when they got a massive military contract for a pistol that I think was a little shady.
Well,
no doubt.
You can go all the way back, shady and government contracts. You know that Luger, we almost had a Luger pistol as our primary carry firearm, right?
Yeah.
When right after World War One, we were trying to figure out a pistol that we could carry. We did the 1911.
And the 45 caliber. They're worth a fortune.
Apologize. Before World War One, the 1911.
Yeah.
Right? Multiple companies were, and at the time, Luger was approached and said, hey, when y'all send one? So they sent over two 45 caliber Lugers.
Yep.
And to this day, there's only one remaining, because one they torture tested and they beat the hell out of.
Yeah.
So, and to this day, that one remains in some museum, and it is considered one of the most expensive firearms in the world, because there's only one.
Yeah. Right.
There's no, it was not mass produced. So we, and that's a German company, you know.
Yeah.
They built an 11.
It was World War One that made us say, oh, we probably shouldn't have the
Luger. Probably
shouldn't. Cancel culture.
Lovely. So, all right, guys, I think we are coming towards the end of this one. So I want to do a quick summary wrap-up, guys. Just talk about our guests. If you would, Moneypenny, tell them just one thing about yourself that's fascinating.
Oh, I speak four languages.
Boom.
Polyglot.
Christina.
Nice.
On the spot.
You put her on the spot, she locks up a little bit.
I am a collared slave and have been for 11 years, and I love it.
Fantastic. Michael?
One interesting thing about me. Mm-hmm. I probably have undiagnosed ADHD.
Fantastic.
I am one of those people that I have 90 hobbies.
Yeah.
And I can go on and on and on and on for hours about each and every one of them.
So, Mike, do you know how many ADD kids it takes to screw in a light bulb?
No idea.
You want to go ride bicycles?
That actually makes a lot of sense. I would be that.
I was like, I can't answer that question, so can we talk about something else?
So I think really, guys, this whole podcast is some kind of an ode to ADHD.
Absolutely.
It is a struggle, guys, to keep us on track.
That could be the tagline for the entire podcast.
A high
period.
Intelligence ADHD.
Reason I reached out to him is because I have this plethora of strange, weird facts that have no home.
Yeah.
And so I reached out. We were always bantering back and forth. And I was like, I need a place for all the shit that's in my head. And I was like, we should start a podcast. And he was like, yeah, we should. And I thought that was the end of it. I thought that we would touch base again in a year and say, we should do that.
One fucking conversation would end it all.
Yeah. Brian got hyper-focused on it and was like, guess what?
He sent me pictures of equipment and was like, we doing this? And then our first episode, I don't even know we're being fucking recorded. I'm fucking ranting about octopuses. And next thing I know, he's like, have you seen the episode?
Sir is no longer allowed to play Jeopardy with my family. We do a family Jeopardy every 4th of July.
Yeah.
And every time you win Jello shots.
Yeah.
Oh. So you get hammered.
Yeah.
You think I'm bad now and I'm 100% sober? Wait till I'm drunk.
Yeah.
He will correct you when you're wrong.
When they're like, hey, ask a question, I look at you and he goes, that's not right. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, that's not right. And they're like, what do you mean? Google it. They Google it. It's like, crap, he's right.
Yeah. That works. My family stopped playing Trivial Pursuit with me when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I could not play any type of board games with my in-laws' family because I played the word Hume at Scrabble once. Like, that's not a word. I was like, it's in the Bible.
Come on. What word is this?
Hume.
Like to be hewn out of stone. As in made of statue.
I've never heard that word.
It's a word. I've heard it referred to weaving.
Yeah.
Like
hewn of the wicker. So.
Yeah.
Clint, what do you got for us? Random. Mr. Viking.
Random? Oh, my goodness. Well, I actually am Viking. We can trace our name back to the clan of William the Conqueror, which is where we get our last name, Williams. It's impossible, of course, to trace your bloodline back to an actual person because we didn't keep records of that day. But that's where Williams came from, is you were whoever of the Williams clan. So William the Conqueror, who was the bastard king of England for a few years after conquering them back then. So that's how I get my name, and that's why I'm a Viking, and I follow the old gods to this day.
Wonderful.
Skull.
Justin, do you have octopus secrets?
I am an amalgamation of strange odds and ends. I'm trying to think, do I have any new facts lately? I don't think I have any.
No new penises? No.
Seriously, it's been a while since we've had a penis fact.
Yeah,
I was paying attention.
Everyone should Google echidna penis. It is the most unique penis on the planet.
I do have a good reference question for you. What's a platypus penis look like?
Because
it's the other.
Yeah.
It's the other white meat.
It's not four-headed, so...
So it doesn't rhyme.
Yeah.
So the only basic thing about a platypus is its dick?
Okay, first of all, I just Googled echidna penis.
And it will change your life.
And also realized that I spelled it wrong almost immediately, which is fine because Google knows.
Yeah.
But... Holy shit, right? Yeah. I know!
Life-changing, right?
Just go ahead and Google it.
Yeah, you can't unsee it.
The bifurcated penis is no longer relevant.
What is quadricated?
Yeah. Look up,
platypuses do have a two-headed penis.
Yeah, but it's not four.
Covered with stuff.
If they were to fight, the echidna would win every time.
Absolutely.
I mean...
More penis.
If you ever want to see an interesting penis, Google cat penis.
Yeah.
They are barbed in order to destroy semen of other cats that
and
they have breeded with a
forced
female.
Copulators, so they won't be locked in.
Yes. Squirrels.
Google's
dangerous.
The most advanced vagina on the planet is the goose and duck vagina. They have actually developed false chambers because a male goose, they're also forced copulators, so it's rape-based. They have corkscrew-shaped penises, and it's forced copulation. So if this female duck doesn't want to mate with this male, they force that penis into a false chamber. It's the most advanced vagina on the planet.
Yeah. Well, I told my mom I was going to tell her when this podcast comes out.
So I'm not sure it's happening now.
I'm going to be like, hey, toward the end, can you just stop?
Just turn it off. When he starts asking random facts about us, that's
listen
that's
to
that's
me
the
talk
point.
And then just be like, oh, yeah. I'm good.
I challenged the goose.
Yeah.
I accidentally locked onto a fucking machine and almost broke it.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Speaking of animals, you said you're an avid outdoorsman.
Yes,
hunter.
I love to hunt
Do you squirrel hunt?
I have a few times.
Okay. That was what I started out on. I do it to this day. I think it's what every kid that's going to be a hunter should start out on. You learn woodsmanship. It's amazing. Anyway, if you kill a male squirrel in the later part of the year, squirrels usually start their rut around December, late November, early December. You kill a male squirrel then, and you go to clean it. It has a waxy buildup underneath the skin inside the genital area right by their tail. I found out recently why that is. A male squirrel, when it copulates with a female, will not only shoot its semen inside, but it shoots a waxy substance inside that plugs it up so that no other squirrels can get in past it. And a squirrel's penis is barbed and rigid, so a squirrel that is strong genetically will have one long enough and sharp enough to reach in and pull out the plug.
Squirrels
of
have
the
like
male.
An arms race going on.
The more I know about squirrels, the more we have in common.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, squirrels masturbate to avoid STDs.
Nice. There you go. That's why I do it. I've been
See,
doing that since
the
I was
more I learn about
that's what I do.
Guys, and the random fact about me, I'm going to close it down. Is that I didn't know 90% of what we were going into.
Andy has a squirrel pants.
And I don't know that I can ever look at a squirrel.
Without getting your whole plug. That puts a whole new meaning to plug your touch hole.
Oh, yeah. We have talked about repeated touch holes.
It takes three dolphins to have sex.
Three?
Three. One to hold the female in place and one to copulate with the female.
So that's
so not
dolphins
needed,
don't have
but
sex,
it does
they
happen.
Rape.
Yes,
it does happen.
Hey, there
so,
could be consensual threesomes.
Look
we
up.
We have to see.
You don't usually have to hold
I talked.
In place to
I
do
talked
it.
About this on a recent episode.
Scientist
was the science? So the very famous study in the 60s.
Oh yeah, you,
involving acid, dolphins, and masturbation. You should
all
look up that.
In the 60s that were worth looking at.
Yeah,
that's like a lot of people who swim with dolphins. Don't realize that dolphins are actually trying to fornicate with them when they're jumping on them.
Yeah. Female dolphins are actually the only mammal we know of for certain that has a clitoris. Other than humans. So
I was about to say I'm glad you threw that last part in there. I was like, I've checked. I found one once.
It's like in the back, right?
It's like El Dorado. I saw it once. I've never been able to get back.
It's on the bottom of the side, guys. So.
It's in the back of their throat.
Everyone, before
all right,
too
all right.
deep into the weeds, thank you again for tuning in. I kind of apologize. If you're feeling like I'm feeling right now, guys, I don't know what to make of this.
This really was supposed to be about veterans.
Well, yes, we did.
We did that in there.
Well, you know veterans. What happened. I know what happened. We brought in a veteran, and the humor just devolved slowly into penis jokes.
Yeah.
Should have seen it coming. It's like when we have chefs on and a gang of them. It's going to be the same way, guys. Yeah. We know what's going to happen.
Thank you, Jim Beam.
I already know. Yes, Jim Beam helped. Jim Beam, Devil's Cut, guys. Still recommend Black over Devil's Cut. Don't know why. I have a bias against this. I still think it's slightly flavored.
I 100% agree. Devil's Cut to me is okay, but you have to have it on ice. If you don't have Devil's Cut on ice, it's really harsh.
Tastes synthetic. I can see that. So, guys, again, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening to us. Get on the Facebook group. Tell us what you think. If you have a story, if you just want to get on there, Michael, if you would start this, get on there and just post about your service, just where you serve, whatever you want to put, what branch you were in. And if anybody else is hearing this and you've served, throw it on there. If you have a dark, weird joke, throw it on there.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to get banned. I got hit for posting up the Evil Rick Astley meme, which was Trent Reznor.
Really?
Yeah. I will make you hurt. But Facebook removed the strike, guys. We're good.
Okay.
We're still solid. No
Seems
flags.
Silly.
No one has gone off the deep end on our group. We appreciate everyone so much. So, throw away kids.
Keep on
dumpster driving. Let's keep this up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.